Yeah, it's hard, some of these things that are going on. I also don't want to use the pulpit in any way to take advantage of things that have been accused against me. I don't want to take this time other than to say that it's amazing what they can do with technology nowadays. And fabrications happen galore. They can do anything to alter pictures. And so, Chris, I will talk to you later. I had no idea that was coming, but I had so many good things to say about Chris this morning, and it's going to shorten my sermon a whole bunch now because of that start. So even though I don't have a tie, I will still get him. He even freaked me out this week, and I was in my office, and I opened the door early in the morning and just to put my computer down, and all of a sudden I'm like, wah! I freaked me out because my garbage can started to shake underneath my desk, and he just jumped out. He's like, wah! So we're like brothers. It's he knows it's coming back at him at some point. So anyway, I want to start off today. I want to paint two pictures for all of us this morning. Let's call this a tale of two scenarios. Scenario one. All of you have been asked to take part in one of the most ambitious building projects taken on in history. You builders out there, you might think this is pretty cool. Your object is to build a 30-story building, a complete 30-story building, in just 15 days. Now, many people around the world think that this is impossible, but you grab your hard hat, you grab your hammer, and you are ready to work, work, work. Well, there's good news. We actually have footage of a glimpse of the work that you did. And so I wanted you guys to watch this video. This took place in China in late 2011. Go ahead. Pretty impressive, isn't it? See the hours ticking by there? 15 days and a 30-story building was made. They've done one more since. I think it's in South America somewhere. But Stefan, I don't know if it's going to set a new standard of building around the Lower Mainland or not, but pretty impressive. And I would just say congratulations to all of you in scenario one, because even though you worked nonstop and you worked hard, you accomplished a lot. Now, here's scenario number two. Suppose I told you that today you are a studio audience, and today's kind of like Oprah, and that all of you are actually going to receive a free gift before you leave today. Before you leave, you're already like, yeah, this is awesome, this is great. Our hospitality team, as you leave, is going to give every single one of you a free round-trip, all-inclusive package to Hawaii for 7-night stay at a 5-star beachfront resort. Every single day, awesome, yes, amen. Every day you will have a 1-hour massage along with, well, nothing really to do at the resort, but mainly to relax, soak in some vitamin D, and sleep. And to top it all off, don't worry, parents, I've arranged babysitters. And for all of you who just can't take time off work, I've arranged it with your bosses that you actually can. Some of you right now, I've got your attention, your eyes are wide open. For those of you drooling around you, those are the parents of like 2 children or more. All right, I'll just let you know. They're just like, oh, seriously? Seriously? So if you had one of these two scenarios to go with, which one would you choose? Well, my guess is that for most of us here today, our reality is the first scenario. Our reality is the first scenario that we live in. We go nonstop, and we probably actually get a lot accomplished. But I have a feeling that most of us would prefer the second one. Who wouldn't? Why? I believe it has something to do with something actually rooted much deeper in us. Because all of us crave the idea of finding rest from the rush of life. Think about that. Think about even your last week, from Sunday maybe if you were here, or just even last weekend to now. Just think of the hours that you spent. What did you do? How was your time spent? Did you work hard? Did you get a lot accomplished? Or in that time, was there a few times in there that you're like, if I could just have a ticket to Hawaii for 7 days, it would be phenomenal. Here's my big question for all of us. Do you desire true rest today? I'm not just talking like, hey, just give me 2 hours for a nap and I'll be fine. But I'm just asking this bigger, deeper question. Do you long for true rest today? If you do, you're not alone by any means. In fact, since 2007, I didn't know this, but I looked this up, there's actually been an international slow day that's taken place in various cities around the world. And part of what they do is make sure everybody just slows down for 1 day out of the year. In fact, what they do is they hand out fake tickets to people who they see in the downtown area who are walking too fast. They stop them and give them a ticket, and they're like, what are you doing? It's International Slow Day, and you're walking way too fast. So if you long for true rest, so do other people in the world, and this takes place. A pastor at 10th Avenue Alliance in Vancouver, Ken Shimagatsu, he wrote this in his book, God and My Everything. He says this. He says, we, all human beings, we long for rest. Rest not only for our bodies, but also for our minds and souls as well. I love this part. Woven into the very fabric of our beings is a need for regular rest and recovery. And maybe right now inside you're like, yes, Jeff, that is me. I don't know where you're at this morning. Hawaii may not be a reality for all of us, but I will say that a consistent, rejuvenating, life-giving, soul-satisfying rest can be part of our regular life. Now, if you think I'm just, you know, Jeff, you're being cynical to us here. Is that actually possible in our culture, in my life, in this day and time? Here's the thing. I think it's absolutely possible. Absolutely possible. See, we've been going through this series now for a little while called Surrendered. And what we're trying to talk about is this one question that overarches all of what we're talking about. What does it actually look like to follow Jesus? If Jesus is our guide and he's our example, and he's the Lord of our lives, what does it actually look like to follow him? Because we don't want to say we want to compartmentalize our lives, that my faith in Jesus is here, I do church stuff here, I do family stuff here, I have my alone time doing whatever I want to do, and I've got my kids, or whatever the case may be. Surrender actually transcends all of those things to say, what does it look like for me to follow Jesus? I don't know. Help me, give me some handles. And what we're trying to do is go through those things. Understand that today is not just a one-off of our series, but it's actually embedded right in our invitation and our challenge to follow Jesus. This entire idea of true rest. And so here's the truth I want us to see today in a new way, hopefully. Is that God invites us, understand this, he invites us into his rhythm of rest for life that is far better than anything we can orchestrate ourselves. Let me say that again. God invites us into his rhythm of rest for life that is far better than anything we can orchestrate ourselves. You see, we do our best, and I know we do, and I would give you a pat on the back if I could, all of you, to manage our time, to plan life on our schedule, and to work hard. But you know what? We're in a safe place here, and if we don't tell anyone else, I think we can be honest with ourselves. Most of us are just plain tired. We're just plain tired. And so let me ask you again, do you desire true rest today? If you've got your Bible with you, open it up. If not, I'm going to have the passage, the words on the screen behind me, so don't worry about it. But I want to look into actually the book of Nehemiah to talk about this whole idea of rest today. And if you can't find Nehemiah, what I would recommend you do is open your Bible to about the middle. You should be in the book of Psalms. And then if you go back, like towards the beginning of the Bible, a couple of books, that's the word Nehemiah is found. And I want to give you just a little bit of context before I read Nehemiah chapter 13. Nehemiah was written about 600 years before Jesus came to earth. And in this time, God's people who were known as the Israelites were kind of on a roller coaster walk with God. But a lot of times they rebelled against him. God wanted one thing and the people just wanted another. And so they continued to rebel against him. And they did so many things that the Bible says were evil in the sight of God. And so God warns them in a number of different ways. If you don't change your ways, he says, I will actually remove you from your land. I will take you out of your bed. Your people will not be in your city anymore. And you will be in a whole other area if you don't change your ways. I'm serious here. I guess the Israelites didn't take him that serious because they didn't change their ways. And so God says, you know what? I'm going to follow through on my warning because I am a God of my word. And so the political and military powerhouse of the day, known as the Babylonians, part of their marching through other lands, also marched through God's land, Israel, and took out the best of the best of the Israelites and went back to Babylon. That is our context for today. But that lasted for about 60 years when most of the Israelites were taken out of their homeland. Well, 60 years later, on a global scale, another powerhouse comes to be known as the Persians. And the Persians are more powerful than the Babylonians, conquer them, and then decide what to do with all of the people and land that they've conquered. Well, what they do with the Israelites kind of seems a little bit, you know, maybe they shouldn't have done this, or this doesn't sound what normal powerhouses would do, but they actually told the Israelites, for those of you who want to go back to your land, you're free to go. And they're kind of like double taking. Are you serious? You're free to go. Some of them said, no, I'm kind of happy you're here now. It's been six decades. Thank you very much. So they let them stay. But a lot of them said, no, we want to go home. We want to go back to where God has given us this land. And as they go back, they find their worst fears are realized. Not only is the city pretty much decimated, but their prized possession, the center of all that they had, the temple where God's presence resided, was completely decimated as well. And they tried to rebuild the temple. To be honest, their hearts weren't in it as much anymore. They started working on their own places and they started doing other things, but their passion and zeal for God's things was just not where it should be. Now, there was an exiled Israelite who was in Babylon at this time by the name of Nehemiah. And he hears about this. He hears about this lack of passion and these people kind of waning in their faith. And he actually goes back to Israel. And he rounds up the crowd and rebukes them. And gets them all excited, encouraged again about their walk with God. And with a new muster and a new excitement, they actually rebuild the temple. And there's a new kind of rah-rah in town, and they're excited about God and their faith again. But in all of this, all is not perfect, because the smell of rebellion still lingers in certain places. So, with that said, let me read Nehemiah 13, verses 15 to 18 here. Because you think everything is all good, right? There's still some areas where rebellion lingers in the air. Verse 15 of chapter 13. In those days, I saw men in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in grain and loading it on donkeys, together with wine, grapes, figs, and all other kinds of loads. And they were bringing in all this into Jerusalem on the Sabbath. Therefore, I warned them against selling food on that day. Men from Tyre who lived in Jerusalem were bringing in fish and all kinds of merchandise and selling them in Jerusalem on the Sabbath to the people of Judah. Verse 17, I rebuked the nobles of Judah and said to them, what is this wicked thing you are doing, desecrating the Sabbath day? Didn't your forefathers do the same things so that our God brought all this calamity upon us and upon this city? Now you are stirring up more wrath against Israel by desecrating the Sabbath. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's look at some of these activities. Some of these evil, seemingly, activities. Doing things like treading wine presses. Doing simple tasks like bringing grain and loading it on donkeys. Bring it into Jerusalem and selling it. It's not like they're building 30-story buildings in 15 days. They're seemingly doing just simple, normal, everyday tasks. And at first blush over this, one would think Nehemiah is either a perfectionist, sleep-deprived, or to be honest, he just needs a deep breath. After all, Nehemiah, look how far Israel has come as a people. They've come back. They've rebuilt the temple. They've done so many things that are good in God's sight. And he has these things to rebuke them on about a few things, menial tasks, it seems like. In fact, shouldn't the Israelites be given a pat on the back for working so hard? They're getting things done. They're earning money. And isn't that better than just staying at home and doing nothing? Well, the question begs itself. The question begs itself out of all of this. And we kind of come up to it, especially in our culture, in the context of how we live. Honestly, I wondered this myself, and you might wonder the same thing. Nehemiah, seriously, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Well, the answer comes actually many years back. In fact, 600 years back, give or take a few, all the way back to the second book of the Bible, the book of Exodus. And in this book, God's people were given a special set of instructions known today as the Ten Commandments. I want to just read a few for you here pertaining to exactly what Nehemiah is talking about, Sabbath. So in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11, it says this. This is God's words to his people. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your maidservant or manservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. So therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. God invites us into his rhythm of rest that is far better than anything we can orchestrate ourselves. You see, it's interesting, these Ten Commandments, just as a bit of an aside, but I think this is important to notice, is that we often misuse the Ten Commandments. Many people think that the Ten Commandments were given just as a general moral code for the world to live by. A lot of people say, you know what, I may not do a lot of great stuff, but I try to follow the Ten Commandments. As if they're kind of a generic, like I said, overarching rule that we all need to live by. But here it's worthy to note that the actual Ten Commandments were given not to the world as a public declaration, but they were given to the Israelites, to God's people, as part of their relationship with him. And so they were not given as a set of rules that were just kind of set apart from life, but instead as guidelines, as a way to be able to enjoy God's best intention for them. In other words, the Ten Commandments were actually given by God as a window into his heart for his people. So if we play the game, one of these commandments just doesn't belong here, which one do you think out of the Ten Commandments is the one? Because it says, do not steal, do not lie, do not commit murder, do not commit adultery, all these things. And honor the Lord by keeping the Sabbath. It's actually interesting, I think, that we find that all of these ones we find mandatory except for the Sabbath. So if these are not rules, what is God getting at in these verses? And why is Nehemiah so ambitious to hold on to them? You see, Chris spoke a few weeks ago, and again, I was going to sing his praises, but I'm really challenged about that now. But Chris spoke a couple of weeks ago on the whole issue of money, something we all love to talk about and we love to hear preached about at church. But I think Chris really hit home and challenged us beautifully. I couldn't listen to it. It wasn't recorded properly, but I read through his sermon that he gave me because I wasn't here. And it was just so challenging for me because his whole idea was that if God sustains all things, we can be free from financial worry and we can be free to be generous with our money. Because God is the sustainer of all things. Well, in a very real way, I believe that Sabbath is to time what generosity is to money. It reminds us that we don't have to be the ones controlling it. Because God does, I don't have to. Understand that. Because God controls time and the things that happen, I don't have to. Let me give you a very recent example, as recent as this week. This week was one of those weeks that I would generally categorize as busy. Now, generally, we all talk about, how's your day going? How's your week? Busy? Yeah, what have you been doing? You know, that's kind of our catchword of the generation. But this week was truly busy for me. I had some things that I had on my schedule that were mandatory, but on the days that I had off, I planned some other things. I planned 3 hours to meet with a couple that needed just some talking to and some help. I planned some other things that just filled up my entire week. And that, along with my busy week last week, to be honest, I started coming home and my kids were freaking out saying, Mom, there's a stranger in our house. Don't worry. Oh, it's Dad. It's you, Dad. Don't worry. But it kind of felt like that. It was just this feel of just being out all the time. And I worked hard and I felt like I helped people. And to be honest, it actually felt good. It was life-giving to me. Not in a cocky way. I'm not trying to tell you that so you're like, hey, that's awesome, Jeff. You're the best. But it's because it was life-giving to me, but I found myself exhausted. So then I would leave all of that, go home, and I went to bed one night. And I woke up and I realized, you know what? The sun actually came up without my help. And then I realized that I went to work and I stopped at a red light and I noticed one of the trees was budding. And that took place without me doing anything to help that along. And then I get to work and I read emails of what God is doing in people's lives. And I realized I had nothing to do with any of that stuff. And I came to this realization. The world went on without me. Here I am exhausted, going, going, going. Just like that building we saw being built so quickly and efficiently. I was even doing good things. And the world and God, all the while, were still doing things without my help. And herein lies the crux of all of this. In my busyness, God was and is inviting me into his rhythm of rest for life that is far better than anything I can orchestrate myself. And as I understand this, I begin to understand why Nehemiah is so passionate and upset at his fellow Israelites working on the Sabbath. It's not because they need to follow a rule, because for them too, they are actually ignoring God's beckoning into following his rhythm of life. They have put that aside because they think that they can control time and the things they do, and that's more important. Our rhythm is to go, go, go. Let's be honest. We are unrelentless, and we get things done. And you're like, Jeff, you don't need to sell this to me. You don't need to convince me. That's how we are. I know it. And we can even wear our busyness as a badge to say, look at me. I got an email from someone just last week who said, you know what, you can meet with me? Thank you so much. I can only imagine how busy you are. And I'll be honest here this morning. My immediate gut reaction was, yeah, thank you. You know, thank you very much. I am a busy guy, and yeah, I'm making time. Like, what am I doing? Like, really? Is that a badge that we should actually be wearing? You see, working hard is not the issue. I'm not telling all of us that we should just chill and relax all day. Working hard is not the issue because God even tells us, work hard. But working nonstop is the issue at hand here this morning. I found out that in the Chinese language, words are given in characters and they often tell stories. And so the Chinese character, the word for busyness, is depicted this way. That's, in Chinese, that's busyness. But you'll see two characters there that form the word busyness. The first one is death. We'll see death come up here. That's death. And do you know what the second character is that epitomizes busyness? The second one is heart. So actually what it says, busyness is death to the heart. To think of this from a physical standpoint, my brother-in-law, who's a registered kinesiologist, told me about a class he took on the importance of our bodies resting after a workout. I said, tell me about this. He said, well, to be honest, I wrote a 100-page paper on this, I said, give me the Coles Notes version. He said, physically speaking, there are three essential elements regarding exercise physically for us. Number one is rest. And he named something very important in here called overtraining. I do this all the time, as you can tell. But overtraining is when our body cannot heal itself fast enough to keep up with the exercise that is demanded from it. In this, it causes eventual fatigue, headaches, soreness, and an increase of injury. He said, second, an essential element regarding exercise, very important to hear this, is replenishment. On a regular basis, that we are putting nutrients back into our body. And the third, I found this so key, and he told me this even apart from what we were talking about today. He said that no training schedule, he recommends to everyone, that no training schedule should be happening more than 6 days per week. Could it be that our bodies actually follow God's heart for his people? Again, in Exodus 20:11, it says, set apart 1 day a week because we are following God's example of keeping that set apart as holy, so that we can take a break from our regular routines to take a deep breath. And understand, it's not just resting. Replenishment is just as important as rest. Not so that we can be pious people and make God happy and say, look at me, God, look what I'm doing. But instead, because God invites us into his rhythm of rest for life far better than we can ever orchestrate ourselves. And just as with our bodies, our minds and hearts and souls need not only rest, but also replenishment. Nehemiah, then, in looking at it this way, is actually getting at something just as important in his rebuke. That God's heart is not for us to work continually, but as part of surrendering, it's to work hard and also to rest and replenish. Reading the rest of our passage today, Nehemiah takes his passionate rebuke one step further. Listen to what he does here in verses 19 to 22. So he's just rebuked them all for working so hard and nonstop. And he says in 19, when evening shadows fell on the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, listen to this, I ordered the doors to be shut and not opened until the Sabbath was over. I stationed some of my men at the gate so that no load could be brought in on the Sabbath day. Once or twice, the merchants and sellers of all kinds of goods spent the night outside Jerusalem. But I warned them and said, why do you spend the night by the wall? If you do this again, I will lay hands on you. From that time on, they no longer came on the Sabbath. Then I commanded the Levites to purify themselves and go and guard the gates in order to keep the Sabbath day holy. Nehemiah doesn't just talk the talk and walk away. He follows through by actually placing guards at the gate because he needs to protect the Sabbath so much. And he says, guys, if you can't do that, I will help you. People are standing there going, hey, what's going on? He's like, if you don't get out of here, I will lay hands on you. Okay, all right, I'm out of here. It's okay. But I think it's because he understands and he's trying to convey and teach the people a new habit. To come back to what God's heart is for them, not just to keep a rule. How much do we protect the Sabbath for us in our culture today? Author and counselor Wayne Mueller puts it this way. He says, we stop because it's time to stop. Sabbath requires, here's our word again, surrender. If we only stop when we are finished, we will never stop because our work is never completely done. Don't you find that to be true? Our work is never done. But we still must practice Sabbath, and Sabbath requires a new habit, which requires surrender. So I come back to the question I asked at the beginning. Do you desire true rest today? In our following and surrendering of Jesus and to his lordship in our lives, and as we see now Sabbath fitting into all of this in such an integral way, Do we desire true rest? Great, Jeff. Sounds good, but give me some applicable points here, because how does this hit my home wherever we're at? And this hits me, like I said at the beginning, I am with you on this. In preparing for this, I want to just put a big mirror up here and just speak to myself, because Michelle and I, we've got four kids who are pretty young, and what do we hear from a lot of people all the time? Four kids between the ages of 3 and 10, you must be busy. Yes, we are. So do we just kind of say, well, that's going to guide us and we'll put the Sabbath aside? No. Do we let our kids just run around outside for a whole day so that we can practice? No. How do we integrate all of this stuff into where we are in our lives? So I want to just finish by giving you a couple of suggestions as we look at how we can surrender our time to God and redeem time along the way. Number one, there's just a few things here, and I hope this helps you in some way. Number one, try to keep one entire day set aside for Sabbath. And what I mean here is, some people may say, well, I Sabbath 5 minutes here, I Sabbath 20 minutes there on the way home from work. I take my Sabbath throughout the day, all day. And in a sense, that's true. You can do that, because we need to stop and just take deep breaths in our life. But what I would say is, God tells us to take one day off. I think there's something important about actually extending the runway of our time off. Instead of 5 minutes, God instructs it one day. I think he's onto something, because it allows us more to do just than take a deep breath, but actually rejuvenate ourselves in what our body needs. It doesn't have to be Sunday. We generally think, as our culture, is Sabbath. It's part of church, and therefore, you know, I'm going to Sabbath. And it very well can be. But maybe for you, you get Mondays off or Fridays off or something like that. Take one day in the week and do this. It also doesn't have to be from sunup to sundown. In fact, the Sabbath that was practiced in biblical times was from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. And there's something really cool to think about as you're eating dinner, that we're now entering this evening and then most of the next day as a Sabbath. And maybe it's going to be that rhythm for you. Number two, in this, practice the things that are soul-filling to you. Very important here. Practice the things that are soul-filling to you. This doesn't mean just sit around and drink lemonade and have the fire on and do nothing. My son would love this. He'd be like, this means I can play Xbox all day? Awesome. No. But do what's also soul-filling to you. I think this is different for all of us and what it looks like. So I can't tell you what you was soul-filling for you, because it's going to be different for you than it is for me. But I love the way that Mark Buchanan puts it in The Rest of God that he wrote. He says, Sabbath is a reprieve from doing what we ought to do, even though the list of oughts is infinitely long and never done. Oughts are tyrants, noisy and surly, chronically dissatisfied. Sabbath, however, is the day that you trade places with them. They go into the salt mine, and you get to go out dancing. You get to shuck the have-tos and lay hold of the get-tos. So understand, Sabbath is not merely the absence of work, but it is the action of replenishing the soul. Whatever that is for you, it may be running, it may be reading, it may be gardening, it may be doing something, but it's something that you know fills your tank and fills your cup. Number three, remember that this is not a religious exercise, meaning that I'm just kind of watching the clock, waiting for the day to be done, go to bed, and I'm like, fine, Sabbath is done. You know, none of these things that we're talking about in our surrender series are in this way at all. And it's certainly not meant to be legalistic. Sabbath is meant to be something that we get to do, not something that we have to do. And again, like I said, it's not meant to be legalistic. My former senior pastor at my old church, he said that he lived in a culture where this was just seen as a legalistic thing. Sabbath, you don't do anything. And so he told us that he lived actually very close to a main road, and people would slow down because he would actually be, after church, going out to garden because he loved to do it. And he said he'd be getting death stares from people that he noticed, that he recognized them. He's like, hey, you're from my church. And they're stopping and just giving him the evil eye, and then they would continue on. But then he kind of made fun of, because he had his 0.5 beer that he drank and loved. But he would kind of see them come by, and he'd actually take a big drink of beer and kind of egg them on a little bit. But he actually got notes in the mailbox at church anonymously. Stop doing work on the Sabbath. And he's like, I enjoy having a beer and gardening on the Sabbath. If that's soul-filling to me, what's wrong with that? But by the same token, I want to understand the tension here. It doesn't mean it's a free-for-all that we can just do whatever we want in the name of soul-filling. And this is what I want to recommend, but it's not a mandated thing. But I when I read this, I thought, you know what? This is so true. And something that we have to also discipline ourselves to enjoy the things that that fill our souls. So, for instance, you may say, I love shopping. So this is a green light to go shopping all day after church until the end of the day, until stores close. Did you hear that, honey? Jeff said it's soul-filling, it's great, it's what I can do. But I love how one author put it. He says, actually, what I try to do is stay away from the things that cost money so that I can enjoy the things that money cannot buy. And I thought, you know what? That's a very good way to say it. Enjoy the things that money cannot buy. Things like creation, rest, solitude, relationships, and our Creator. Now, if you're running out of gas on the way home from your Sabbath, or from church on your Sabbath, and you're like, I can't do this because I can't. No, get some gas in your tank so you're not going to run out on the side of the road. But you understand the what's deeper here than just a rule is what is soul-filling to you, and to try to stay away from commerce on Sabbath so we can enjoy the things that money cannot buy. And lastly, remember that change will not come overnight. It is a habit needing development. It is a habit needing development. But it births out of our surrender. It births out of our surrender. When we decide, God, okay, you've told us this, and I know that I'm not there, but I want to surrender my life to you in its totality. And Sabbath is a big part of that. You tell us. And so I think maybe I need to have a conversation with my spouse, with my family, with a friend to help me keep me accountable in a new way to develop a new habit of Sabbath. So what the Renaults have done for us, we're trying this, and again, we're not necessarily going to be perfect, but we've just said, you know what, until Easter, we're going to just do no electronics on Sundays. Not a hard and fast legal thing, and we're trying to differentiate that with my son. Even this morning, he's like, well, what if like grandma calls or something? Talk to her on the phone. Yeah, but that's using an electronic. Okay, well, we'll talk through that. But it's not time to play Crossy Road or, any one of those kind of fun games and apps. It's because we want to distance ourselves so that we can play some family games and do things that otherwise we wouldn't do. Now, the kids don't know this yet, but we're actually going to make this, hopefully, a lifelong thing on Sundays. But we didn't want to scare them too much, so we just told them until Easter. So they're going to be welcome surprised on that, I'm sure. But even coming to church, they're like, this is kind of weird. We're talking to each other. This is really fun. And anyway, that's what we're trying to do as just one way of exercising and surrendering ourselves to Jesus to go, you know what? Sabbath is set apart for this. We're going to go take some more walks and enjoy family time because it's soul-filling to us. I hope that we've heard from Nehemiah today in his passionate plea to God's people. I hope there's something in here that all of us can take a look at and maybe go home and say, how does this fit my schedule? That I can put my schedule before God instead of the other way around. Because my life is intended to surrender to what God's best intention is for me. Before we close today, I want to just ask us to be silent, actually. Just to take a few deep breaths, because maybe in the hustle and bustle of everything, and you know in a few minutes, you're going to get busy talking to friends, going to get kids, or doing whatever. And we don't have this time too much. But even just as a way of Sabbathing, just for a moment, let's just be quiet for a few minutes. Concentrate on even the breaths you take. Say thank you, God, for the breath that we have. And I'll pray and close our time. Father, thank you that we were not created to go 24/7. Thank you that you've wired it into us. It's woven within our fabric, this need for rest and recovery. God, forgive us for going seemingly 24/7, for our exhaustion, and even putting badges on ourselves, thinking that we're doing something amazing. Father, thank you that you invite us into your rhythm of rest for our lives. And Lord, I know that the realities of it are hard because we live in a culture that just demands busyness and applauds it so much. But God, help us to find Sabbath, to find soul-filling, restful things that remind us of you and remind us that you are the one who controls time, not us. Thank you for our time together, Lord. In your name we pray. Amen.